Welcome to the dojo, where we take three marketing stories and turn them into marketing tasks that you can do today to turn your marketing around and increase your traffic, increase your ranking, increase your leads, and increase your sales. This week, you're going to hear three stories, from one from Tim Cameron Kitchen, one from Jess Percival, and we have another guest joining us. Hello, Daisy.
Hello.
Hi, Daisy. Tell us a little about yourself and what your relationship is to marketing.
So my name is Daisy Burns O'Keefe, and I am a digital marketer at a charity called National Numeracy, which is a bit of a weird job because we basically try to get people to improve their maths. I actually did a bit of mentoring with Jess. She was my mentor as part of the Exposure Ninja mentoring program, I think it's called. And I have a little podcast on the side. So lots of avenues into marketing. A tiny bit obsessed, but I'm trying to rein it in.
We do love marketing obsession over here with Exposure Ninja. Well, I'm going to whiz around these stories. Daisy, perhaps you'd like to tell us what your headline is for this week.
Yeah. So my headline, I kind of made it up because it didn't have one already, but it is the latest at Costa hot, what was it? Hot milkshake. That's it.
Curious. Jess, your headline for this week?
Mine is the smart and evil mobile game conversion funnel based on my own experiences.
Ace and Tim, your headline for this week?
Love that. Mine is OpenAI has a new voice cloning AI. It's pretty scary, but we marketers can't play with it just yet.
Well, even though we can't play with it, I'm kind of interested to know your thoughts on what we would do with it if we had it. So Tim, tell us a little bit more about your story.
All right. So OpenAI last week at the time of recording this has debuted a new model called Voice Engine. And this is an AI model that can recreate someone's voice from just 15 seconds of audio of them speaking. The demos are scary good. There's lots of implications, which we can touch on in a second. They've been using a version of this. If you've used the ChatGPT app on your phone and you know you talk to it, and it's been using, they've been using that that voice model in that. But this is a hint of what it could do if they released it more widely. It'll be amazing for translation, because as well as talking in the same language as the sample, it can also be translated and it can talk in a French accent. So for example, every year we release a new version of our book, How to Get to the Top of Google. And every couple of years, I dedicate an entire day and stock up on Strepsils and this glycerin throat syrup. And I just smash out the audiobook version of this. How amazing would it be to just throw that into Voice Engine and have the whole thing be narrated, but also to then click the little French box and have the whole thing narrated in French as well, with a perfect French accent, which I totally lack. So I think for marketers, particularly of businesses where content is a big part of their sort of marketing mix, this could be an absolute game changer. Of course, though, there are lots of security concerns too, which is actually why I think they've opted not to release it publicly, and instead they're just showcasing what it could do to allow everyone to panic and go and build regulation and guardrails that can help the world come to terms with technology like this becoming widely available.
That's really interesting. I'd love to know, do any of you have any thoughts about the trust element of it, and whether so I can fire my book into this tool and it can create it all for me, or I could use it for my ads and get testimonials created. Do you think that customers will see, well, maybe their trust will be impacted at all?
Yeah, I hate this. I hate it so much. And I've said this before when we talk about AI, I think that like adding a stamp of like created by humans, not AI, is going to become the like no added preservatives, all natural sugars. Like, I think that's going to be that of marketing. And I think we might see a time where people are very receptive to it in terms of they just don't know it's happening, right? The amount of stuff that my parents show to me and family members show to me, like, look at this, isn't this great? And I'm like, that is not real. Like, if you zoom in on that picture, and this isn't even necessarily AI, but it's like my mum will show me something and be like, how cute is this animal? You zoom in, it's obviously been handmade by someone. It's not actually a living creature. And so I feel like there's going to be this really weird shift where people are going to trust it for a while because they just aren't aware of it. Then there's going to be a big trust fallout, and then people aren't going to trust anything. That's kind of my prediction. There's other implications for it that stretch over into other areas of my interests, you know, and there's definitely something to be said about, I'm just going to use like Frozen as an example. I know that's not inherently marketing, but like, I like listening to Disney songs in different languages because it's fun. You get a different experience. And if I like want to put Disney songs on while I work, but not be distracted, I'll put them on in a different language because I'm scratching that itch, but it doesn't distract me in the same way. And a lot of the times they change the lyrics to be more applicable to that language, whether they change something to rhyme with a word in that language, or they change something that's more regionally relevant. And just talking about the translation aspect, I wonder if you would lose something, some of that connection that you could have made by hiring, you know, an actual voice actor from that language who would say, oh, actually, that example you've given, that's a UK idiom. If you change it to this, it'll have the same feeling. I don't know. It's very, very interesting. And horrible.
I do kind of wonder whether they could build something like a GPT into it where it can just double check before it, as part of the transcription process or how it works, make sure this is valid for the language they're saying. So check the idioms, check the blah, blah, blah. They can be like built into the process. But Daisy, I wonder if you have any initial thoughts from a marketer's point of view, like how you might use this or anything like that.
Yeah, I was thinking probably along the similar lines with Jess, because the thing that I would think is sometimes brands have very specific language that they use and certain words and a kind of tone of voice. And I wonder how well an AI would be able to adapt to that, especially in another language, because like Jess said, you probably would need someone human to still come back and look through what it's done and whether it translates in the other language. I'm not sure. I hadn't heard of it before, but yeah, definitely raises some questions.
Yeah, Tim, I can't help but assume you thought of some use cases for this already, were it to come into public access.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously the security concerns are quite numerous and terrifying, I suppose. You know, we still by default trust voice. So if my mum got a phone call asking me to transfer money to a particular bank account, she would probably do that. You know,
especially if that call is from your voice, Tim, that's been pulled from the podcast, not telling anybody that that's what they should or can
do. Exactly. And with 15 seconds of training material, you could walk up to someone on the street and just talk to them and collect that data very, very easily. You know, the barrier to training this is incredibly small. But having said that, so long as those things get figured out, I think this would be amazing for, you know, we often think, or when we're working with clients, it can be quite difficult to get content from clients, and it could be very difficult. I remember when we wanted to get testimonials from clients, we had to send video crews around to their, you know, to their place of work, and we had to get all the microphones and cameras and lighting and everything set up. Now it would just be a case that a client could provide us a written testimonial. We could, with their approval, get that transcribed into voice and, you know, use that for marketing assets. If we wanted to transcribe our podcast every single week into different languages so that we could have access to the however many billion people that don't speak English, we could do that. And this would be very straightforward and simple and fast. I think there's a bunch of second order consequences that come with all of these things, namely that at the moment, one of the reasons why I think video is so engaging on social media is that there's a higher threshold to creating video. And that tends to mean that the video created is better quality. If you reduce the barrier to creating video with voiceover to effectively zero, I think you get a lot more rubbish generated. And the same with podcasts. Podcasts are difficult to produce and they're a bit annoying, and it's a big commitment to produce lots of episodes. Well, if you can create AI-generated ChatGPT stuff, you could now have a podcast with almost infinite episodes. So the podcast platforms get completely flooded with absolute crap. And I don't think any of them are particularly well set up to filter in the same way that maybe Google is set up to filter absolute crap, because Google has been filtering absolute crap for years, whereas podcast platforms haven't necessarily had to do that. So I think in some ways it makes marketers' jobs easier. In some ways it makes our job harder, as we have to cut through more noise, and the signal to noise ratio probably drops quite a lot. But I think it's interesting, and it's obviously only a matter of time. So we're going to have to get to a point where we either don't trust anything that we see and hear, or there is some sort of watermark that denotes that this is trustworthy, it's been authenticated, it's real. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't know which way it will go.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I do wonder whether like you'll need the visual side of things before you really trust it. And even then you might still question it. So for example, if there was a podcast and you're trying to listen about digital marketing and you're trying to educate yourself a bit more, you can listen to the podcast and you think, okay, it sounds like reasonable. I don't know whether it's completely trustworthy or not. I'll just watch the video podcast version instead. Oh, well, that's all being built with Sora. I don't know. Like it could possibly happen. But I think one thing that will make marketers stand apart, but especially like brands and businesses stand apart, is this human element. So like Jess's built by humans thing, or powered by humans, or rather than powered by AI, it's going to really separate people. Like that's why copywriters, whilst initially shocked and fearful for their jobs, are actually getting a real resurgence, because people are like, actually, you can't replace that human expertise in copywriting. There's like a nuance that AI will always fail to grasp. That's why it's a great co-pilot and not the actual pilot of content creation. I did just absolutely slam my hand on the keyboard and that really hurt. So, does anybody have any more thoughts about that, Tim?
Yeah. I'm not sure that's. I don't think I fully agree that copywriters are safe indefinitely. Unfortunately, I think over the last couple of months we've seen the advent and high performance of ultra long context windows. You know, 1 million, 10 million tokens, which means that an AI can. Let's say that you're writing a piece of copy about a particular legal case or a particular piece of legislation. Yes, a very experienced lawyer could write that, but with a 10 million token context window, that AI could be given every single case of that particular thing ever. It could be trained on countless conversations, email threads, sales transcripts. That AI can bring more knowledge about that topic to every single question than a human could. It could also be fed books, reams, transcripts, recordings to match the tone of voice. You know, Claude is incredible at matching tone of voice. If I give it my book as the training, you know, in the context, the tone of voice is a direct hit. So I think it's, I think this is a not if, a when. Personally, I think, I don't know.
I'm going to massively disagree with you on that one. I think that AI, for as well trained and educated and, you know, it can absorb all of this information, you say, learn all these lessons from McGilvy on advertising and stuff. Would an AI come up with Just Do It or Got Milk or Think Different? Or I don't know. I think it could spit out 50 different slogans. I just don't think that a human would read each slogan and go, oh, I understand what that is. I understand what you're trying to communicate. I think it will just be able to tell you words, but not words that communicate an emotion or a feeling or evoke something in you. I think that takes human expertise and like knowing what works, whereas an AI hasn't got the opportunity to test and see what works and then come back. Well, not currently. When it does, we really are screwed. I don't know if it can do that. I don't think Just Do It would ever come out as a response from any form of prompt you could give an AI.
We shall see. I think we're gonna live in a world where you could map almost infinite numbers of agents based on real people's interaction. The AI could then field test ideas against virtual groups of agents. Like we're pretty much there already. The infrastructure hasn't been built, but I don't know. I think of all of these things as a when, not an if. I don't know. I guess we'll see, won't we?
Who knows? You know, When you were off the for one of the podcasts just recently, I wanted to highlight a story about a famous copywriter who had passed away. And I'm really sorry to say I can't remember the name of that person right now. But one of their core adverts was for Nike. And it was, some of you may be familiar with it, is where somebody's running through the woods. And it's like a, you know, two-thirds picture of somebody running through the woods. Bottom half is just text, smallish kind of Nike logo. And there's a bit of text explaining why people run and whatever, but the main copy bit is like, there is no finish line. And this evokes this, yeah, I'm a runner and I'm always just running because I love it, and you know, I'm not going towards something, not in a race, I'm just, there's an emotional connection. And people were like stealing these posters from shops and I'm putting them up, and like running clubs are like really into it, collector's item. I don't think an AI ever spits out there is no finish line. I don't think it gets how a runner feels and thinks and is impassioned by what they do. I just feel that's irreplaceable.
Well, when Ogilvy came up with the clock thing, right, the clock ad for the Rolls Royce, he spent, whatever, 40 hours in a Rolls Royce factory. I think if you could train an AI on, you know, 10,000 hours of conversations with real runners, you don't think it could come up with a better, you don't think it could come up with something that resonated with that audience? I don't know.
I mean, Claude, is it Claude 2 with a massive token window now, or one of them? Let's find out. Let's download a few copies of the latest Runners Weekly, whatever it's called. Hang it in there, give it a few instructions, let's see what it comes out with. Any last thoughts on this before I pick the next person's headline?
I think AI Fight Club is over. I think I'm ready to hear about Costa's milkshakes now.
Okay, yeah, agreed. Daisy, tell us more about hot milkshakes.
Yeah, so basically I saw this in the wild, which I was quite impressed with myself about, because normally I see things on LinkedIn. And it was a bus stop advertisement at first, and it was literally the Costa logo in the bottom, and then it was just a picture of what looked like a normal Costa drink, and then underneath it just said hot milkshake. And I was like, what is that? Why would anyone want a hot milkshake? Surely that's just hot chocolate. And I kind of thought that it might be an April Fool's joke, but it's not, because it started around the end of January, I think it was, the campaign. And I'm kind of wondering, so it'd be interesting to get you guys' thoughts, actually, but I was kind of like, we've got enough infiltration of influencer coffee brands, and I'm really not sure that this new hot chocolate hot milkshake thing is going to be the savior. It's alarmingly close to April Fool's as well, so I thought it was a joke, but it's not. And I'm kind of thinking, is this trickery of language or is it clever advertising? I'm really not sure, because I'm not a Costa customer, I guess. I don't know what their tone of voice usually is, but I don't think it's a kind of play on words kind of brand. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it, when you feel like a brand is releasing something that nobody asked for just to try and be different. That kind of feels like what Costa's doing. And what's funny is I have almost an opposite example in that a keyboard company that my housemate buys from, who sells keyboards that are based on font, like typefaces, said yesterday for their April Fools that they were doing a Comic Sans, but it was called like Cosmic Sans, and the whole keyboard was going to be Comic Sans. And that was just the April Fools, but they've had so much interest in it that they're actually probably going to release it. Amazing. And I thought that was really, really interesting. It almost feels like Costa's doing the opposite, right? Like, I've never looked at a milkshake. Maybe you and I, Daisy, are in the minority of people who have never looked at a milkshake and thought, I'd love if that could be warm. Because like you said, you would just have a hot chocolate or you would have something different, right? But it feels like they're trying to blaze a trail and nobody is following them.
Yeah, I had a look at their social media comments, actually, because I went on their Instagram just to see what their kind of usual approach is, because I thought it was just nice pictures of drinks. And it seems like the actual taste review is not good either. Apparently, it just tastes like water. So all this advertising.
It's all the ice melted from the milkshake.
Yeah, Yeah. They did have a thing to rename it, actually, which I thought was quite funny. They had a post of what the top names that people had come up with publicly that they're going to temporarily rename this hot milkshake to. I can tell you what they are because they're quite good. Are you ready?
I can tell where this is going to go immediately. This is never, if you're a brand and you want to get the general public to name your thing, stop right there. Just stop. History does not paint a good story. But yes, Daisy, please share with us.
Okay. So the first one is Thicko Deluxe, followed by Milkshake McMilkshake Face. And
there
then
we
the,
go.
The final contender is Fiery Frappes.
What I love about the last one is that it's just that they're just describing coffee, aren't they? Like a frappuccino that isn't a frappuccino, it's just a cappuccino. You know, surely.
Not exactly.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a coffee drinker, so Dale's coming in being like, I'm a coffee person, I'm gonna tell you.
And that's me shut down, right? That's I do wonder though if it's like the longest April Fool's campaign in history. They literally like have spent two or three quarters just like building up, like, or they just knew it was gonna cause this kind of, you know, reaction from people and they're playing into it, like that was the whole intent. I think it was like a story you brought the other week, Jess, about was it some, I can't remember what it was. Was it like makeup or something, or one of these brands, and they were going to release something and they basically did a big, I can't remember what it is. Anyway, doesn't matter. It's not important. Should companies be doing these kind of like launches without definitely being sure that people are going to want it? This just, maybe is it not really understanding the market? Make sure your product is actually viable or not. I don't know. Any thoughts?
It's just a mini thought. I really like the idea of launching products where the goal is actually just to get people talking a bit, especially with most of the engagement focused social feeds that we've got where engagement is rewarded and leads to greater visibility. I think, you know, sticking up maybe you could do it as an April Fool's, but like, what's the most outrageous, horrendous coffee flavor you could possibly think of? Let's get that up. Let's just get the people talking. Is anybody going to drink this thing, or have you tried it? Like that type of thing. I quite like it. I think it gets, there's that really annoying thing, isn't it, that you always see on LinkedIn. Well, it got us talking about it as a sort of a benchmark for, oh, well, obviously it worked because we're now talking about it. And obviously people just talking about your brand, it's not as simple as all publicity is good publicity. But I'm actually quite curious to try Costa's latest part of their initiative to see how many calories they can get into the inside the average human being. So I'm quite interested to see what these things taste like, to be honest.
I suppose this is the most I've thought about Costa for a long time. And I guess if I wonder if they were just trying to cash in on, like, maybe they'd heard a lot of people being like, oh, I'd love to have your milkshakes. Like, I love them, but in the winter, it's just too cold for it. And then they've like tried to sort of cash in on that. Like, I do get that. I mean, I can't really have a lot of Costa because they're not ideal for vegans anyway, but you know, I could imagine that maybe they found a demand for that, and maybe they have done the research, and maybe they're just too early, right? They're too early to the trend. People aren't ready for hot milkshakes yet. It's yeah, very, very interesting.
I guess they're in a good position as well, because I think among a certain demographic of kind of younger people, they're easily influenced through social media. Everyone's obsessed with coffee or what sort of drink they're seen drinking. And they kind of had an open route to that kind of audience, because it's like, well, what's the weirdest drink we can come up with? Let's see if people will drink it, whether they did that research previously or they probably didn't chance it, because that would be a bit of a gamble, especially on billboards. But yeah, it's definitely a weird one.
I have worked at Starbucks in a prior life many years ago, and the product rotation was like pretty quick. You would have, you know, for each season we get a new bunch of stuff that would come through. A lot of time this stuff would have been out there tested in a really small region, because when you're Starbucks you can test something in just like one city or one state, or just like put it out there and see if people enjoy it, and then you can decide to, like, you know, take it national, take it global, whatever. I wonder if this has done well in some country or some state in the US, and then they've been like, okay, let's try this somewhere else. I don't know if you heard, last year there was the olive oil espresso or olive oil coffee or something. It's like, I haven't tried it myself, like some specialty coffee shops that do it. The idea does not work in my brain. Sorry, no, it could be incredible, but I, you know, it doesn't work for me. But they've spotted something, it's working in some regions, let's roll it out. Like, you know, the flat white was really popular in New Zealand, and then they poached the idea and they rolled it out everywhere now offers a flat white. So it's possible that somewhere this has gone down really well, but I don't know. But I don't know. From a marketing point of view, it's got people talking. Is it going to get people into the shop to try it once? Will then that trigger a second or third visit in the future? Quite possibly. Is there a net gain from it? Probably. Yeah. It's probably worth it after all.
I think if we see it come back next, like, I feel like they'll take a break during summer. If they don't take a break from that during summer, it means it's doing exceptionally well. Mm. But I think we'll know if it's successful if they bring it back next winter season. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like that will be like, oh, it's hot milkshake time. Okay, winter has truly begun. It's like when you see the pumpkin spice lattes and you know it's autumn. Maybe it'll become the next
big trend. If you're Costa and you're trying to increase your market share, there's only, you know, there's a lot of coffee shops around, there's big coffee companies as well. You've got to think of something to make you stand apart. You've got to have some kind of competitive difference or advantage. Tim, have you had any thought from the business owner point of view about the competitive disadvantage, advantage, difference for this?
Yeah, I guess it's, I don't know, it's probably about looking at what you can do and saying, are there any ways that we could configure our existing inventory or our existing capabilities and just tweak them, refine them, and get them out there in a way that's going to get people talking? And you can just test this, can't you? There's a very low cost of testing. I mean, very low long-term cost of testing something like this. Obviously, it has to be rolled out and you have to run the marketing campaign for it, but you don't have to do a full Costa and advertise outside Waitrose. You just road test this with some of your existing customers, and if it gets traction, just keep moving it to the next level. I think it doesn't hurt to be creative with what you can offer, and hey, makes life a bit more fun, I guess.
It just made me think of, I remember when McDonald's did like a Big Mac with bacon. And they turned it into like, they were obviously testing it out to see if it was more popular than the Big Mac. But then they also kind of made it into a you versus them type of situation where they'd be doing loads of polls and votes. Do you think it's still is it still a Big Mac if it has bacon? They really like played into this sort of fandom that they'd created around their brand of like Big Mac super fans. To the point they can sell or like auction off a bottle of Big Mac sauce or whatever. So it's almost, obviously this is kind of deviating from the point a little bit, but, you know, Costa could definitely turn this into are you a hot milkshake drinker or a cold milkshake drinker? And the people that do actually like the hot milkshakes then become these like super fans who feel like they're part of this private Costa club and become their own like brand advocates and stuff. Like, I feel like people are really passionate about their coffee shops. You're like a Costa or a Starbucks or a Nuro's. Like, we will not go to Costa because my partner always gets ill when he goes there. No disrespect, Costa. It's probably not you. It's just one of them things. But so we have like a fake vendetta against it. But yeah, I sort of went off on a bit of a tangent there.
No. You've kickstarted something because you said about people being like diehards about a particular thing. I'm a frat person and so on. They're selling or giving away hot milkshake keychains as part of this. So I just did a quick little bit of thinking now. So you can get like a keychain. So you can be like a representative, like a diehard, as you say, and be like, yeah, here's my little keychain thing. Gets people in. Another reason to get people in. Questionably, are they doing this because they realize the product isn't going to do well and they have to add in this additional thing just to get people in the door? They're like, okay, our drink sucks, but you'll get a key ring. So come on in. Like, it'd be great.
How interesting.
That's a fab story. I'm really glad you brought that one in, Daisy. Thank you so much. Jess, you also have... Oh, yes, Jess, you're next. What's your story?
Yes, I was going to talk about this last week, but I thought Tim might enjoy it. So I thought I would save it for this week because Tim was away last week. And Daisy, maybe you've also had your run-ins with mobile games. I'm absolutely addicted to this mobile game. It's a war game. And for those who don't know, there's definitely a differentiation differentiated between the people who spend lots of money and people who don't. And this game is absolutely wired to make you spend the most money possible. And I was playing it for quite a few months. And then in mid-January, I quit because I was like, this is putting so much, I'm putting so much time into this. And I was getting upset about things that didn't matter. So I took like 2 months off and now I'm playing it again. And I sort of started, came back to it in kind of more of a healthy place. But I started noticing little things about it in terms of the way that it gets you through the funnel in terms of spending money. And it, I don't know, it's just very, very clever. Like every morning I'll go on, I'll have so many notifications. And one of the notifications will be to go onto, well, a few of the notifications, I'll go onto a page that has like, you can buy this for $4.99. But you also on that page, there's a little free chest that you can collect. And that's what the notification is for. The notification is for that chest, the free thing. But to get that free thing, you have to look, engage with the page that has the paid stuff on. And it sort of got me thinking about, and you might be listening to me talking and thinking, well, I don't have a mobile app or I'm not e-commerce. How does this, I can't give people a free thing and then ask them if they want to spend $4.99. But you can, because you can create lead magnets and you can create this free stuff that gives value. And it's not giving little gems and little resources of food and wood and stuff, but it's giving some other type of value. What's the food and wood for your customers? What's their food and wood? But no, and then it has it's Dale's like, Jess should be banished from this podcast because she always brings the most wildest stories ever.
I love it. Keep it coming.
I also noticed there's events all the time. So right now we've got an Easter event. What Easter has to do with a war game set in the icy tundra? I don't know. But they found a way to fit it in. You know, we've got a Ramadan event. We've had a, you know, we had an event just recently for the year anniversary of the game. They give us gift codes. They gave us a gift code for April Fool's Day. They gave us a gift code for International Women's Day. They gave us a gift code because they hit this many players. You know, they do all this stuff. And then it makes me feel like when I spend money, I'm like, because I do, because it works on me, embarrassingly. But when I do spend money, I'm like, oh, they gave me all this stuff. You know, they do all this stuff for me for free. You know, why not spend a little bit of money? But yeah, the events, and it's all, they do so much in terms of leaderboards and like pitting you against other people and, you know, limited time deals. It's always limited time deals. You can see what you'll get if you'll spend that little bit more. You'll get this if you go for free. But if you go to this level, you'll get this. But actually, if you spend $9.99 on top of your $4.99, you'll get this as well. What's the other thing that it does really well? Other than it does countdown timers, it does massive discounts. You know, you can buy these three things separately, but actually if you buy them together, it's a quarter of the price, half the price, you know. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you own a business or you work in marketing, download some war game, Clash of Clans. The one that I play is Whiteout Survival. Download one and see, just see how it plays you, because it does. I don't even want to look at my transactions to this game because I would be disgusted. And there's people I know that they're spending hundreds of thousands, like in our little group, and I have a real like social life there as well, which is just ridiculous, you know. And they've got another thing about this game, they have incredible translation features too. So it's just like, it's just ridiculous, right? So they're giving you all these different reasons to come back. They're giving you social. They're giving you these notifications for free things that then take you on to paid things. It's just that, you know, ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I've completely outed myself as someone who's a sucker to this funnel. But I'd love to know if any of you three have interacted with mobile games like this. Oh, it has no ads, by the way. It doesn't have any ads. There's a lot of mobile games that have a lot of ads, but also want you to spend money. And I think that makes a difference here as well, because you're not being interrupted by ads for other games. I downloaded this game because it was an ad in a different game that I was playing, you know? But yeah, I'd love to know if any of you have similarly been drugged down the same funnel, or if you've interacted with stuff that is like giving you inspiration for marketing stuff in a different way, because this is marketing at its core. It's just gamified marketing for the game itself. yeah, very interesting.
I want to reassure you, Jess, I'm looking at a stat here from a games analytics company that says, I'm just going to read it. Chinese game company Century Games, a substitute of Century Huatong, has generated $500 million in revenue from Whiteout Survival overseas after 1 year of operation.
Yeah.
So I would agree that if you're in business and you want to learn how people think and how people work, like I'm assuming they're not just generating that $500 million from you, Jess. So there's probably one or two others who have also partaken in this this incredible psychological manipulation study on how to part people from their money. It's amazing, isn't it? They don't need ads. If you're that good at separating people from your money, then you don't need ads. It's beautiful, but it's also a little bit sinister, isn't it? I think this sort of thing fascinates me in the same way that conversion optimization fascinates me, where you're basically talking about manipulation, aren't you? You're sort of manipulating people into doing things, but in a way that they're happy to do it, which I guess is effective manipulation. So therefore, it's really interesting to just understand all the things that you've talked about, like FOMO and, you know, the loot boxes thing, which was massive a while ago. It's just helping us build a better picture of how people actually think and what actually motivates them. And if we have a really good picture of how people actually work, then when we go to our marketing tasks, we're going to be better marketers because we're working from a more rounded picture. Love it.
I was actually just thinking about the loot boxes part that you mentioned just then, Tim, because we had a client that we worked with where we did a piece of data outreach, a data piece which ended up being picked up and mentioned in The Guardian and by the BBC. And the point of that was, it was like 60% of people believe that loot boxes should be classified as gambling. And that picked up as a big story because at the time there was a lot of discussion about, do loot boxes qualify as gambling? Should we be concerned? It's a fantastic, it just goes to show that you can find data that is interesting to turn into a story, that either you are the origin of the story or you can jump in the story and contribute some kind of expertise. I think that's quite important because a lot of people might not realize there is all this data internally within a business that they can turn into a story. So whilst Jess's original point was about take the lessons from it, like how to get more out of your marketing funnel, there's actually another part to it in terms of like all that data is also a story which can be digital PR in the future too. Daisy, I think I jumped right over your next point.
I think I was just going to say that I love, firstly, how Jess is being played by the game that she is playing. But the other thing I was going to say was, I feel like it's just a really interesting thing. Because I remember years ago where you'd get a mobile when you were young and kind of getting a game and you'd have to pay for all these different subscriptions and small payments that you wouldn't necessarily know about before. And then they'd come out of your account gradually. But I think this is interesting in the sense as well, because a game's like the perfect way to get the data that you were talking about, Dale. Like if you know the right way to kind of analyze it and read it and spin a story out of it, but also understand how people are thinking, what they want to see, what might keep them coming. Like a game is the perfect way to do that because people are using it. It's constantly getting that information from loads of different people and you don't have to pay for it. I guess it's kind of like a product in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. It reminds me of like gamification within software. So we've had like SaaS companies that we worked with in the past, and you look at that kind of industry and how each one will work. You know, like fintech, it's quite common for them to utilize referrals to get more market exposure. So for example, I'm in a subreddit called Beer Money where everybody shares their referral code so you can get like £5 extra for switching to Monzo or, you know, sign up for this new app called Snoop, which tells you how to overpay on your mortgage payments and stuff like that. And it's like 50 people all in that thread saying, use my link. And now everybody knows who Snoop is or Pension B or, you know, whatever else. And, you know, you think of Pension B, I'd never heard of until I was in that community. I only heard about them like 2 weeks ago. And now I spot them as sponsorship at the football when I'm watching the highlights of the weekend. I'm like, oh, there's two places. Okay, maybe I should get this app PensionBee because I'm seeing it everywhere. It's like recognition and bringing it back. Like, gamification is great. Like, you can really have a fantastic network effect, like getting more people talking about you and spreading. Like, we'll always hear about Dropbox being so effective at scaling to be a $1 billion company through referrals. You can get an extra gigabyte of storage by referring your friends and things like that. I do have another example as well, or what it reminds me of, and that is when I was going through, I was looking at some sales training the other day. I was like, I need to clue up myself on sales. I looked a whole bunch, and as always, with almost all of these salespeople, they know what they're doing well. It's like, okay, you can buy my course, you can buy my ebook, you can buy whatever. And there's always an upsell or a downsell. There's always like something you can offer. So it's like either you can get this free crate and or you can buy the one for $4.99, or you can get this course, or you can go in my community for like this much more, or you can have direct consulting for like triple that, or you can can't afford that, great, here's the ebook, or here's the template for like a discount. There's always like some option available to you. And I think that works for any kind of business, really, depending on your payment tiering system. Awesome. Okay, well, we've heard all three headlines. I want to pick the one that I think we should turn into marketing tasks for marketing managers and business owners. Oh, tricky one, Zig, because I think there's quite a bit of stuff to learn from all of these. Shout out if you have any kind of thoughts on which ones you love the most. When you can't say your own, okay?
I think Jess is.
Jess is? Daisy, how are you feeling? Tim's or
yeah,
Jess?
Yeah, I think Jess is. Jess is good.
Okay, deal. Right, Jess, your story has won. Congratulations, you win. Oh, you can get this crate now that you've won.
How about VIP 12 or whatever? I'm not a VIP 12. If anybody is watching this and is like, plays Whiteout Survival and thinks I'm a VIP 12, no, I'm not. Anyway, what can
that's a secret about? Lingo.
Yeah, it is, yeah. That would just mean I spent quite a lot of money.
We could talk about Duolingo as well. It's a fantastic example with all of this gamification. Anyway, that's for another podcast, perhaps.
True. Yeah, yeah. In terms of what marketing managers can take from this story, I would say it's about making your offers enticing. That's really what this is all about, and is finding ways to get people onto the pages that you want them to be on and move them down your funnel. So that could be including, you know, an offer, or like I said, a downloadable or a calculator or something for free in order to either get somebody to spend or get them to share their information with you. That's really what this boils down to. In Whiteout Survival, they're trying to get you to share your money with them. But in this case, it could be that your data, or it could be your actual money. So yeah, that's what I would say is review your offering on all your key pages and make sure that it is enticing.
Yeah, that's a super suggestion. One thing that we did was with our website was to add in a post-marketing review offer where you can get all of our books by sharing our free marketing review with your network. And if you're not familiar with what the free marketing review is, you can go to exposureninja.com/review and request a free website and marketing review where we will highlight how you can increase your ranking, your traffic, your leads. And we'll send that over to you in a little video. I say a little video, it's about 15 to 20 to 35 minutes long. It really depends on how many opportunities we can find on your website. So if you want to have one for your business, head over to exposureninja.com/review. And then at the thank you page, you can get the books by sharing it with your network as well. Super. Tim, what tasks can business owners take from Jess's story?
I've been trying to think about it. I think that maybe the lesson is to allow massive financial success to be a spotlight on some things that you should be studying and looking at. Like, I don't think many business people look at Temu, for example, but Temu or TikTok or this game are all huge. Also, all strangely happen to come from China, but I don't know what the story is there. But I think that business people should be studying crazy growth stories like this, even if you're not finding direct comparables, just sort of training your own inner AI on what's going on in the world and where people are seeing ridiculous traction, I don't think is a bad thing to do. And if you find yourself getting addicted, then hey, you know, it's working. So yeah, I would just
welcome to the club.
Welcome to the club. Be a level 12, whatever, grand wizard. By the way, also having a secret language is a great way of building community, right? Because this is one of Dan Kennedy's principles. If your audience is using the same language, they feel like they're insiders, and that keeps them inside your world. So, you know, there's even lessons there. I think just sort of programming yourself with this stuff is a really good way to become a better marketer and a better business owner.
Yeah. Last tip, go and get a copy of Dan Kennedy's No BS. Is it the Ultimate Sales Letter? I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, Ultimate Sales Letter. Superb read, and will help you with like understanding how to shape some of these suggestions you've had into the copy of your website, or you know, the marketing promo that you're doing for some of the upsells or downsells or cross sells that we're talking about. Super. Well, I'm going to move us on to some quickfire questions. Daisy, are you ready?
Can I shut that door behind me quickly because it's annoying me that
Yeah, crap. Go for it. Yeah, sure. Excellent.
I'm back.
Excellent. That's great. Super. Now I just need to find where I've left myself these quickfire questions. I need to find them quickly. Super. Daisy, if you had just 1 hour to improve your marketing, what would you work on?
I think I would spend the hour kind of updating who your audience was and the insights you have into, like we said earlier with the game example that Jess gave, just knowing what they want, being consistent and current in the way that you communicate with them. That would probably be my 1 hour spent, I think.
Great use of that hour. Daisy, what would you do with an infinite marketing budget?
I feel like this question is really hard and my answer might be a little bit controversial, but I think I'd try to compete with like fast fashion brands to change this cultural kind of thing around buying clothes that are bad quality from potentially really good marketing. Like the way that they advertise these brands is quite clever and it gets into people's heads, but I think you probably would need an infinite marketing budget to compete with them and kind of get them off the radar, because that might take a while.
It certainly would. Daisy, which marketing skill would you recommend that the 18-year-old Daisy work on and why?
So I think for my 18-year-old self, I would advise getting comfortable with numbers and analyzing data, because I think there's so many platforms and tools that give you that, but you need to understand it. And it's in social channels, websites, emails, paid advertising. Like it touches on so many aspects of marketing and specifically digital marketing. But it's also, you can then bring those insights to the right people and have the conversations that you need and hence put out the right content or whatever it is that you're using that data and insight for.
Superb suggestion. Daisy, what are you most excited about in digital marketing right now?
I think that people are being authentic again. So probably more specifically influencers. It's nice to see that people are tapping into the fact that influencers were selling things just for the money's sake, whereas now they're thinking about the audience, the sort of things that they might want to buy rather than just making money. So I guess it's another cultural shift that I'm gunning for.
I'd love to see
it. I've got big dreams.
Daisy, who should we invite to be on the podcast next?
I put down my friend David. He is a graphic designer at a design and marketing agency, so I feel like he probably has some interesting takes. I guess he understands marketing, but he would also come at things from a design perspective and a brand perspective. So I think he'd be an interesting person to talk to.
Yeah, I'd love to hear his insights. Design is a huge part of my love for marketing. So yeah, I'm more than welcome to join us in the future.
let him know.
Ace. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us for this week's episode of the podcast, Daisy. I hope you've had fun.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And thank you everyone for listening or watching the podcast this week. If you haven't heard all of our old podcasts, you can go to explosionninja.com/podcast and you hear 300 plus episodes of mostly Tim talking, but you occasionally hear myself and Jess too. Or you can go to explosionninja.com/review and request your free website and marketing review instead. Do both. It's absolutely fine. Otherwise, I'll see you all next week and take care of yourselves. Bye.